Gene Ammons on tenor sax and leading the Gene Ammons Quintet with a little nifty number called Blue Ammons. Tommy Flanagan on piano, Doug Watkins on bass, Art Taylor on drums, and the great Ray Barretto on congas. This is from Ammons's 1960 album, Blue Ammons. And this is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. It is Free Your Mind Friday. This is our open forum in which we expect to hear some strident opinions. And you help us by giving us your particular analysis on whatever the subject is that you're presenting. You help us free our minds, hopefully. Hopefully that will be done. 888-874-4888 is the number to call to get things started. We start in Baltimore. Marie, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, you, Trish. And
hello.
You always get me started. I mean, I don't want to call sometimes, but you make me call. And I want to say... And I want to say you had a doggone good show Wednesday with the gentleman that you had recorded. And I want to say this in reference to what Bernie, the one that man is running, forgot his whole name, Bernie.
Sanders.
And okay.
Sanders.
I'm not voting for him because he is said last year at some meeting or something that he's 100% for Israel, and there are African Americans who don't care for Israel, as you well know, and so I'm one of them. And other things that he brought up were okay with me, but that's the only thing I have to say. And you have a good day. Bye.
All right, thank you. So this is the one issue that cancels everything else out for you when it comes to Bernie Sanders. Oh, she's gone. All right. E from Edgewater, you're on the air.
Hi, Eutrice.
Hello.
Hope you're feeling well today.
I am. Thank you. And I hope you're feeling well, too. So what are we talking about today?
Yeah, I'm feeling pretty good, and I hope the rest of the audience is doing well also. I guess it's a follow-up from yesterday's show where at the end you were talking about Bernie Sanders running, and the first caller had to talk about Bernie Sanders. And that's what I called for, too, but it was about Ms. Cortez not supporting him. And I was delighted to hear when you said that, because I'm starting to get a good feeling about her. When she first came on the scene, I was a little skeptical. She came on like one of these corporate raider, young corporate raider type. But now, after a few months has gone by, I see she's supporting a lot of issues that I'm pro for, and I like her spirit. And I believe she's not supporting Bernie when she was supporting him in the primaries, and now she's no longer in support of him, is because she sees that he's really a charlatan and he's a phony, and he just was in it to give Hillary somebody to run with, and you know. He came across, he didn't want to make no waves with Hillary. You know, if you're trying to win an election, you're going to bring out your opponent's bad things. And he was making like he was this nice guy. And then he sold out his 13 million followers and told them all to support Hillary. So I held that against him greatly. And then the fact that after talking about the disparaging rate between the rich and the poor, right after the election, he buys himself a lake house. It sort of bothered me, too. I mean, he's entitled to buy whatever he wants. He's got the money for it. But it was kind of like mean-spirited to me after talking so much about the disparaging rate, you know. So I'm really happy about Ms. Cortez. I think she needs to just calm down a little bit. And, you know, she's 29 years old. She'll be 30 in October 13th. That's another thing. I'm born on the September 13th. She's October 13th. And maybe in 2024, I think she'll be 35 on October. Does that qualify her to run for president, do you know?
Well, I know you have to be at least 35 years of age, but I don't know the technicalities of, you know, if you are just shy a couple of hours, if you're shy a couple of days from being 35, whether that would affect qualifications for the presidency, I don't know. But we'll see.
She wouldn't be shy. She would be, if the election's in November and she turns 35 in October, then she would actually be 35 a month before the election. But I don't know if she needs to be 35 to start running in the primary and stuff. But that's way ahead of things, but that's something maybe to look forward to if you're in favor of Ms. Cortez. Like I said, okay. I find her spirited, and at least she's not afraid to say things. And, you know, it seems to me there's a lot of people against her because they don't like people that like to you know, buck their system, so they're trying to bring out all these bad points on her. And I think she's holding up to it, and she's got, you know, a lot of moxie, and I'm in favor of her. So thanks for letting me get that out, and have a good day.
Okay. Thank you, Ian. Thank you. Thanks so much for calling in. 888-874-4888. It is Free Your Mind Friday. Bill, what are you going to free your mind of? From Brooklyn.
Good afternoon, Utrice, and to the PRN community. Well,
thank
there's
you.
Been a lot of you're welcome. Lots of things just burning my ears, and just very briefly about Mr. Sanders. I don't really support him. I see him as sort of as a heretic. He reminds me of the guy on the network screaming, "I'm as mad as hell. I'm not going to take it anymore." He's got some good points in terms of that I do support, but I just don't really care for him by any means. And I think he did. He started off very slowly, sort of seeking African American support in his last run, and I do have some issues regarding his unbridled support for some of the Israeli policies. But otherwise, the thing that's on my mind really today is Venezuela. And we are on the cusp of, meaning we, not us, of course, but the sort of U.S. government is on the verge of an illegal military occupation. And they're setting the stage to invade. And as you may know, Mike Pence and others are down there beating the drums, and even this guy from Virgin Atlantic is, which surprises me. I don't know how he gets in, sort of sponsoring
a concert.
Yes, which is surprising. I have to read more about that. But my main thing is, where is the opposition? And actually, this morning it was so much bothering me that I called on my way to work. I was waiting on the subway station. I called Gillibrand. I called Mr. Pretty Boy Jeffries and Mr. Schumer, and I say that somewhat disparagingly because with Mr. Jeffries, he represents Brooklyn, and there is a history of people in Brooklyn being progressive and oppositional, and for him to go and sort of sit in the middle of the road and do nothing really disgusts me, and he has not spoken out on this in any manner at all. and is basically in line with the support of the invasion that is coming. And I do see it as imminent. And so I've done everything I can do as one sole individual and written various posts and things, but still it seems like this is something that Trump and corporate Democrats and Republicans are going down the line in terms of proceeding with this. So that's kind of what's concerning me greatly today.
What do you think accounts for the relative the wishy-washiness of a response in the United States about the U.S. government's involvement, as we've talked about several times on the program, in Venezuela?
I think it's a historical pattern that that politicians and the nation continues to go down the road for invading countries where, of course, it comes down to dollars and resources. Venezuela, it said, has the most oil on the planet that really has been discovered so far. And so it's a poor black and brown nation. And yes, the government there has not held up to the responsibilities that it needs to for its people. So there are some problems, but it's for the people of Venezuela with global reasonable support in the correct way to help them through these difficult times, but not by invading them. And as our, you know, you have had people in Bolton and others have said very boldly, it's all about the oil. Even Trump himself said, you know, basically that little nation down there on our borders, you know, it has oil and we should get it. I'm paraphrasing. And so so it comes down to dollars, oil, and when it comes down to corporate interests, there's no political affiliation that is not immune to it, it seems. So that's the wishy-washiness that, and I said even one, and something I said to someone today is, where are the voices of all of these blue wavers who rode into power victorious just weeks ago? Where are their voices in opposition to this pending invasion? I hear nothing.
Well, of course, it is something that concerns us here on Lead Stories. We've talked quite a bit about it, and I think we were the first in the wave of criticism to point out that Congress had a responsibility to check the actions of the president, and it didn't.
Yes.
So this is something that we will continue to watch and hope that it does not come to a full-scale invasion and all that death and mayhem that ensues after such a thing. So
let's hope. And pray. Thank you, Beatrice.
Thank you, Bill, for your call today. Jay from New York, you're on the air.
Yes, good afternoon, Beatrice. How are you doing?
Okay, you sound full of vim, vigor, and vitality.
Ain't nothing wrong with that. You should be if you woke up in the morning.
What are you freeing your mind of today, Jay?
Hey, listen, this whole thing with Bernie Sanders and the rest of these so-called candidates are nothing more than retread nonsense. They have no vision for this society. They have no vision for what direction this country should go in. They have nothing to really offer the people other than things that just won't happen because they really don't control the bodies necessary for it to happen.
But is that a fair criticism of Bernie Sanders? Because Bernie Sanders, at least to my recollection, was quite specific in the last go-round about what ought to happen in the United States, the policies that he would seek to implement.
Yeah, but he would seek to implement. But if we're going to be honest about it, Utrice, if you don't have control of the Congress and the Senate and you can't swing a couple of votes from the other side, ain't nothing going to happen. I mean, it showed when Obama was in power, It showed when this clown that's in power now, it's all basically a farce. This whole thing is controlled by lobbyists. And it seems like the lobbyists are the ones who are setting the direction of the country. And all of the lobbyists are controlled by rich men. It's just like when you look at what's going on with this tax season that the media isn't really talking about. A lot of people are not getting the tax returns that they were getting last year. Now, are they upset about it? Yes. Are they going to do anything about it? In all honesty, no. Because you have a Democratic Party who are supposed to be the voice of the everyday people, don't even know how to mobilize the people to do the necessary things to get power. So it's all about the media and money and how they're going to generate money for these media corporations. It's not about everyday people like me and you.
You're pretty harsh on them, but I think you have a right to be. But then I'm finding that in your critique, we're not hearing very much about where the people are failing. Where are the people failing?
The people are failing is they don't have the ability or the understanding on how to organize themselves in all honesty. That's where the people are feeling. The people are looking for leadership from individuals who are morally corrupt, who don't know how to lead. They don't want to lead. There's no grassroots people out here today like it was at a certain time to motivate the people, to get the people to go out and do the necessary things. Now, I say this to you. If the people are motivated to come out on the grassroots level, then that's how you get people like Cortez. And, you know, the funny thing is that when you find somebody that has that ability to motivate the people, what do the establishment do? They go after them. So that should tell you something right there, that we as the people need to figure out how we can dominate ourselves to do the work that is needed. Because I have a lot of issues with Cortez, but I will say this one thing. She tapped into what needed to be done to bring her into office. Now, what she does from here forth will be another thing. But she is definitely the example and the direction that we as the people should be looking at on how we motivate ourselves and come together as oppressed individuals in this country to try to make a change. Until we do that, we're going to be in this same vicious cycle. And the cycle is going to get more and more vicious.
The point is that it is not just one person or one side's responsibility. Governance involves the people. But when the people sit back, when the people opt out, when the people leave it to others to orchestrate their political future, this is what you get. This is what happens. When you relinquish control over your political life, when you say, well, okay, we did our part, we got you elected, and then they go to sleep. Well, why blame politicians for doing what politicians do? There's nobody there presenting a credible opposition to them. They already have what they want. And then the people are asleep. So I say this all the time. We can't keep pointing the finger outward. We keep putting the responsibility for our political future and our current situation, our current plight, we keep putting that on somebody else. No, that is our job. That is our job, too. Thanks, Jay. Thanks for your call today. Marty from Connecticut, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Utrice and fellow listeners.
Hello. Thank you. Good afternoon to you.
Thank you very much. I must confess, it's been a while since I last called, but I listen or try to listen every day.
Thank you.
Food for the soul. You know, I want to make two quick points and pass on the baton to the next caller. My first point involves Bernie Sanders. And quite honestly, I don't know how many of the listeners out there are aware of it, but I just pass this on for food for thought. You know, in 1962, Bernie was arrested for protesting against segregation in the public schools in Chicago. The police came to call him an outside agitator, and many of your listeners are familiar with that terminology, as he went around putting up flyers around the city detailing police brutality. And he was an active member of the Congress on Racial Equality and the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. That's my first point. So, I mean, I understand some of the callers, and I should say, I'm not supporting Bernie Sanders at this point for president. I only know who I'm not going to vote for at this point. My second point with respects to Mr. Sanders is, which I found very interesting, he endorsed Jesse Jackson, spoke up for the Palestinians. Now, this was in 1988. Now, he may have nuanced or changed his position. I can't see where it's materially changed, but he supported Jackson, and from my perspective, he organized and got Vermonters to vote for him, which is saying a lot, because I visit Vermont, and I can say unequivocally that there are more cows in Vermont than people of color, by probably a factor of more than two. And that was a state that Jesse Jackson carried. So when I hear people talk about Bernie Sanders, I'm just, everyone's entitled to their opinion. I'd like a little nuance in the conversation, because he defended Jackson when Jackson came under fire for comments he made on the Palestinians. And he said, you know, that the Israeli assault on the Palestine at the time was reprehensible. All I have to say for today.
Okay. Let me ask you something. It's interesting. I'm keeping tabs on what people are talking about. I wonder why Bernie Sanders has emerged as a, you know, he's gotten a lot of play here. I wonder why that is.
Well, you know, I don't know. He said things that address systemic issues. And, of course, it's always the devil's in the detail. But I do believe that the United States is faced with systemic problems, and not, you know, changing of the guard in the White House will have limited effect, as we saw. I mean, I was a supporter because it was the choice, and he won, President Obama. I vehemently disagreed with his approach for handling the bankers on Wall Street. I viewed him as a corporatist Democrat, and that was very problematic. But I had to start, you know, I had to keep score on things, and that was the best option at the time for me, using the weighting system that I use, point system that I use. I can't say the same for Mr. Sanders at this point, and I know, I think people are excited because he is addressing the systemic issues, but for me, what really would have shown that he wanted to win and implement the things that he is talking about is if he were to run as an independent. I think if you're under the umbrella of the Democratic Party or the Republican Party, you're under the umbrella of corporate money, and you can only go so far. So if you want to do what Trump does, Trump starts at an extreme and then falls back, or forgets and falls back, or lies and falls back. I don't care. I think that if Bernie wanted to get some of the things done, he has to be able to have a free hand to start at an extreme and negotiate down.
Well, thank you. You brought some very important points to our attention. Let's see how they play out. And we will pursue
Excellent. Some of these points that
we're hearing today. Thank you so much, Marty, for your call. David from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Yes, good afternoon, you, Therese.
Hello, good afternoon.
I want to announce to the listenership, the members of the LEAD seminar that occurs 5 days a week, that we're going to have a second seminar meeting in New York on the 26th of May. So put that on your calendar all over the world, that we're meeting in New York on the 26th of May, 2019. So that is our date. We're going to meet at about 1300 hours local time. That's 1 p.m. That's one thing. Now, the other thing, I want to talk about Bernie Sanders also. As long as you have the system we have with the what I call it a one-party state, you have the Republicans is essentially, after Nixon, the so-called white folks party, and you have the Democrats. So the Republicans are Republicans, and the Democrats, to me, are Republicans light. And what I think is important for people to get through their heads is that these are two ruling class parties run by oligarchs, and they are not about to give up all the advantages that they have. You see, all this Roosevelt-type things, these New Deal things that Bernie is talking about, universal health care and so forth, would mean a tremendous loss for the ruling class that controls the corporations in this country now, that is a country that's run by essentially corporations working with those people that they put into Congress. So they're not about to give those things up. And we need to understand that have things that benefit the people who live here, the masses of people, is going to be essentially outside of Republican and Democratic Party. Democrat Party. It's impossible that you expect to get into the party of the rulers that run the place and think you can turn it around to do the things that the people really want and need. Occasionally, if they see rebellion, they will do something and throw you some bones, some extra bones. But if you think that you're going to have a system, a political system and parties that will, like the Republican, Democrat, they'll do what the masses of people need, that's impossible. That's impossible. So people have to understand that this is the case. So whether you're talking about Bernie or anyone else, all those people have to pledge allegiance to the rulers, no matter where they are, whether you Booker or the person in California or whoever. They have to swear allegiance to predatory capitalism, and that's the way I look at it.
Well, thank you. I just want to bolster your comment. Yes, I've been invited to give an address at the community church on May the 26th. And I'll tell you more as things develop. I'm looking forward to it. Last year, we had a great meeting. It was just wonderful meeting so many people and such an outpouring among everyone and to everyone of love and affection. So I'm looking forward to it come May 26th. And as things develop, I'll let you know what is planned. All right.
Yes,
thank you.
And we're looking forward to even a greater meeting this time. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much. All right, Leona from Michigan, you're on the air.
Greetings, Yatrice. Thank you for taking my call, and greeting to the audience.
Thank you for calling in.
Yes, ma'am. I was calling because there seems to be this, well, for lack of a better term, I'll call it a phenomena of, have you heard of this group called American Descendants of Slavery?
Yes.
Okay, very good. They launched a website recently, and it includes a black agenda, which is very interesting. I've been listening to some of the YouTube videos with Miss Yvette Carnell and Antonio Moore and Dr. Sandy Darity, William Sandy Darity, and in fact, I support a lot of what they are attempting to do, the constructive work that I think they're attempting to do. They seem to have had impact on the narrative in terms of the 2020 Democratic, upcoming elections, the 2020 elections about race-conscious policies, including reparations. There was an article in the New York Times about that, and they attribute this change in narrative to these on-the-ground activists. And I believe that this group, ADOS, along with this thing called the Breaking Brown family, were instrumental in that narrative change. But the thing I wanted to get to was I've noticed that there are some people who are upset with that term, American descendants of slavery. Now, I've heard people refer to themselves as descendants of free people who were stolen and then enslaved in the USA, which is accurate, or descendants of enslaved Africans in the USA, which is what Attorney Alton Maddox uses, descendants of enslaved Africans. But I guess I'm a little confused as to why people are upset or take issue with that term, American descendants of slavery, and why it seems to be a sticking point for some. But I guess that's a question that you cannot answer, but it's interesting. I mean, it seems like they're a younger set. When I say younger, I think maybe early 40s, late 30s, and they seem to have a focus, and they have apparently moved this narrative a little bit. Three candidates, potential Democratic candidates, are talking about reparations right now. Reparations for, again, the descendants of free people who were stolen and then enslaved in the USA. I guess my question is, do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, I think sometimes, and I think this is one of the times, when people are more excited about, getting a lot of energy, getting a lot of attention, and that becomes the issue. It isn't.
Mm-hmm.
You need to go someplace really quiet and get your act together.
Mm-hmm.
And so that by the time you make yourself public, you have covered a lot of ground. But we tend to, and I'm not saying this as a criticism, I'm saying it as an observation. We tend to tell our, agenda way ahead of time, before we're ready even to execute anything.
Mm-hmm.
The issue of reparations, if you check it, is fraught with all kinds of opposition, even from people who you would think would say, well, I need to support this because it's to my benefit. We really haven't achieved the first step in the discussion on reparations.
Agreed.
We've been talking about it, and that's not bad to talk about it. But we shouldn't confuse the talking with action.
Mm-hmm.
It is not a goal yet. We're still in the finding out phase. We're still trying to feel our way around this question because it is not a monolithic question. It's got several moving parts to it.
Mm-hmm.
All those questions are uncomfortable. Who is black?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. Right. They address that to a degree. To a degree,
but
right.
You just said it, to a degree.
Yes,
we
ma'am.
Should have by now, if you're going public, you should be firm about what it is you stand for. Whether people agree or don't agree, that's really not relevant. The important thing is that you know what you're about.
Indeed.
So we should.
I'm sorry. Go on.
I mean, this is a question that is fraught with a lot of emotional downsides to it. People are beaten up psychologically and emotionally about the question of identity in modern times. So we have to. That's just an example. I think the best way to begin this process, and they're doing it, but I would hope that they can be more pointed about it, which is to do it outside of the public gaze right now, because we don't have answers. We are searching. Some people have come up with answers over the years, over the decades, going as far back as Carter G. Woodson and even before him. This notion of identity. What is our identity? Where do we derive identity? And when we have identity, what does that then require us to do? How do we do it? So it's actually very fundamental work. Very fundamental work. But it is very hard, noting the nature of our history. It's really the kind of work that has to be done outside the gaze of the public right now.
Yeah, and the camera.
I think it's good that they're doing it. I think it's very good that they're doing it, and very necessary.
Yes, ma'am, I agree. Mm-hmm. Yes, ma'am, I agree. Mm-hmm.
But we have to just be clear with ourselves what we are facing as contradictions. We have internal contradictions. We got to deal with those.
Yes, ma'am. Mm-hmm.
We have to deal with those.
Right. Well, can I, the name of the website is ADOS101.com. In case I presented it inaccurately, but those who are interested in learning more about it, the website is called ADOS101.com. And people can
I commend them for doing the work that they're doing.
Yes, ma'am.
I just want to caution that they keep reminding people this is not an overnight job. This is a long road. Because we're dealing with some of the heaviest issues America has ever had to deal with.
Yes, ma'am.
And has yet to solve.
Mm-hmm.
So we take our time.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you so much for your feedback, Eutrice.
Thank you, Leona, for calling in. Albert from New Jersey, you're on the air.
Eutrice, I'm so happy to talk to you today.
I'm happy to talk to you.
I had what I think is an epiphany about Mr. Sanders. And I guess this doesn't happen very often, but I think that we are on the cusp of something that could really be one of the best things that ever happened to us. Here's food for thought for the group. One, Mr. Sanders has there's a lot of skepticism about him because, the switching bait deal that went down. And the old expression, fool me once, shame on you, fool me twice, shame on me. Now, what Mr. Sanders did, two things occurred in the last week. One, he declared unequivocally that he was running as an independent. Fantastic. He also raised a huge amount of money in a short period of time, which means that this guy's got a lot of juice with him. I say this, which I'm going to do. I think that if you want to see a real turmoil happen in the political system in this country, that we write to Mr. Sanders and explain to him, listen, I'm in your corner if you won. Every time you do a speech now, you explain to people exactly in 5 minutes or 3 minutes that they need to establish and become part of the independent party so that when you get down to the polls 2 years from now, you don't get the flim-flam. Because that's what we're being set up for unless you have a specific party. You can't go down there as a Democrat and expect to vote as something else. It's just not going to work. Two, if he makes this declaration and he stresses it to all the supporters he has, you are going to see all hell break loose because it's going to, one, challenge these wishy-washy Democrats where I want to be. I don't want to vote. I think I'm getting screwed. Well, okay, here's your chance to go out and join the independent party, and you can do something. And three, he has an opportunity to build up something, and if he isn't willing to do that, if he isn't willing to push making a Democratic, I'm sorry, an independent party, then you know he's a fraud. And that's what your caller, I think yesterday or day before yesterday, was expressing. He said he thinks it's a fraud. And I think this would call him out. It would set the whole political system on an end, and you would definitely see some changes. And one of the offshoots could be that there are going to be a lot of people who would run out and become, quote-unquote, part of a quote-unquote third party or an independent party. That's my thought.
Okay. So I listen to you, and I immediately pick up so many reasons that it's not going to work, not that way. At this level of politics, you can't form a party, raise money, and conduct a campaign all at the same time and win. It would not work. It is too big a job.
I'm not suggesting he try to specifically form it, but let his listeners or supporters be aware that that's one of the things they need to do. That's all.
Yes, but they won't do it because in the end, somebody from the Sanders camp, and since it's a Sanders-focused effort, will have to undertake that. That's too much to do in such a short time.
Okay. I can appreciate that.
It isn't that I don't want Sanders to win or to succeed at anything. It is just the pragmatic business of how politics works. By the time you announce that you're running, you should have a party. We don't have a party. Now, how are you going to organize a party in 50 states where there is no party? There's no history of an independent party being part of the discussion in all these political years. You're starting from scratch. Now, miracles do happen, but I don't think this will be one of them.
Well, I was sort of hoping or thinking that if he at least expressed it, it would be someone on the other end, that is, on the political inside, who would be forcing such an idea that perhaps a lot of mainstream people hadn't even given two thoughts to.
You see, we don't appreciate how dedicated the system is to the concept of a two-party system.
Okay.
You'd be surprised how the Democrats and the Republicans would get along in stamping out any possible threat to that formula. We have a two-party system.
I got that.
Either Democrat or Republican, this makes life easy. We don't need anybody coming in to muck up the works. Bernie has a problem I think he is a decent-minded man. I think his record shows that he has consistently tried to take the other side on the side of the people. But there's no question that in recent years, he also has posed a problem to himself by not being clear, by not being specific about where his political allegiances lie. This is what people are having a problem with Bernie. Is he fish or fowl? And
that's what I thought. I was wondering if maybe he made it a point that this needs to happen, even if he doesn't win. Could it push the concept forward? But I see your point.
See, it takes time to do these things. When you rattle people at such a fundamental level, they don't get over it quickly. They don't.
You're right.
They're waiting. They will wait to see signals that you, the errant politician, that you have understood the damage you have done, and that you truly are who you say you are, and you have now to make amends. You have to demonstrate fidelity to them. They have no reason to be faithful to you, not after, you know, throwing all your votes behind Hillary Clinton.
Right.
And then there is, you know, you leave the people to sort it all out and to trust that you had the best of intentions. Sanders has not yet understood, or he's not yet behaving like he has understood, how deeply he offended people. To build back trust, it's not going to happen by 2020.
Good point.
Well, you made good points too. And this is where we are. We have to struggle with a lot of imperfection. And in the end, we have to choose which is the least jarring thing that we could live with.
You aren't going to say the lesser two evils, right?
Or the way it's shaping up, the evil of two lessers.
Very good.
So we have work all around to do, and we all need our thinking caps on. We need to recognize that simply because we can't quickly come to a conclusion about something, that does not relieve us from the responsibility of trying, wrestling with the issue, and coming to the most practical and pragmatic solution. That's what we have to do. We have to grow up a bit about politics. It's not perfect, and we cannot expect perfection in everybody, but it's a matter of, you know, you choose the poison that you could swallow.
Okay. Thank you very much for your input.
Thanks, Alfred. Thanks so much for your call today. Willie, you're on the air.
Hello, beloved. How are you?
Hello.
And good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
And my
you sound like you're in an echo chamber.
Is this any better?
No. Go ahead.
Yes. You know,
yes. Yes, we could hear
yeah,
you.
This
is a lot of reverb, but we can hear you.
Oh wow! Yesterday's program, when I. Each program that you do, we should listen to it twice. Yesterday's program, when I listened again, I said, oh, wow, now I got it. It almost flipped me. On the Catholic Church, that's kindergarten stuff. Because, you know, we've been known about this all over the world. But who is exposing the question is, who is exposing the Catholic Church, and why? In every religion, I'm not very articulate. Please forgive me. I wish I was, because, you know, whenever
you're
I call
just
you...
You're fine. You're doing fine. We're understanding you.
I'm looking at this, and I say, oh, I got it, the second time I listened to that program. But the real... what is not being said... is this. There's only one person I know that deal with the Jewish question, and that is Minister Farrakhan, and he spoke last week. Everybody could go and look at what he's saying about the Talmud and what these people are practicing and the things they're doing around the world. When you look in Sierra
you see, I have a problem with this. And the problem I have with it is that essentially we are having in public, being available to the public, a kind of inside debate, an inside quarrel that started many, many years ago. And from all indications, will continue for many, many more years. I don't like the idea that these things are presented as news. I don't like that idea because it's not. It is essentially a religious fight going on in which there is no winner right now, and it won't be for a long time. It has happened before with many religions, between the Catholics and the Anglican Church, even now, or Catholics and Presbyterians. Religious groups get into fights.
Okay.
And what they do is they try to recruit people into their corner based on the arguments that they make. And every group is holier and better than the other one, and is more righteous than the other one. The fact is, when you look at the horrible things they all have done, all of them, without exception, you're amazed that people could just isolate the points they want to argue, and in order specifically to sway people's minds. I don't go for that.
Okay, I'm not saying you should, but we're looking at critically at the Catholic Church, and we all agree a lot of things that they're doing is very, very, very wrong. But what we're not looking at, and nobody speaks on it, is the Jewish people and what they're doing. For example, in under that banner. The diamonds in South Africa, the devastation, the environmental devastation that's been, and the suffering of people. Nobody's talking about that.
That's not true. That's not true. In the 70s in particular, when the issue was apartheid, there was a lot of discussion about the connection between even... in New York City, the Diamond District, and oppression. There's a lot of that. But what it has become, and this is why we have to be very critical in our analysis, is a wholesale attack from one group attacking the other, using things that would target people's emotions. What is the history? What is the history? How come we don't talk about how Africans exploited Africans? How come we don't talk about that? Especially in the diamond trade. How come we don't talk about these things? But we select this group and that group because we know there is a long history of enmity between the two. And neither of them gives us a context, a historical context. It is laden with a lot of undertones. And this is what upsets me. It is not that these things are not happening or had not happened, but it is lifted out of the historical context so that all you have left to deal with is a quick, you have to make a quick decision whether you like this group or you like that group based on one thing that has been explored. That's not right. Because we have, frankly, when it comes to slavery, we have not properly understood the role of Africans in slavery. We have not understood the role of Islam in slavery. This is what John Henry Clark and our esteemed historians have been talking about for years. The role of religion, period. The Christians, the Muslims, everybody who could make a buck, they were involved. need to appreciate the universality of that. No one group was worse than the other. They all indulged in it. And the rating of countries. Look, I was born in the Caribbean. The oldest Jewish synagogues in the Caribbean are in Trinidad and in Jamaica. Why were they there? Why were they there?
Exploitation.
Well, it's not just exploitation. They were part of the whole business, the global business of slavery. I understand that. We have to see it that way. Well, the cruel, cruel music man has this one. Thanks so much for calling in, contributing. Let's talk on Monday. Bye-bye.